Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin and how did they end? Let's find out on episode 29, Dido. Previously on Fan of History, two siblings, the older sister Dido and the younger brother Pygmalion, inherit the rule of the Phoenician city of Tyre. Dido marries her rich uncle, but her younger brother is making plans to seize all of the power for himself. Powerful Assyrian super king Shalmaneser III grew old. Three powerful men now fight for control of the Neo-Assyrian Empire. So, Dan, what is happening with these crazy siblings?
Well, we're going to talk a lot about that, but first we have to set the stage for the Assyrian Empire, which figures a lot in this episode. Shalmaneser III is the king of Assur, or Assur's chosen king, king of Assyria. Yes. The Assyrian Empire is the strongest state by far in the Near East. Shalmaneser III has been around since 859 BC. There were alliances of nations fighting him, but these alliances have all crumbled. The three powerful men are Dayan Assur, the field marshal, the Turtanu, who controls the army. There are two powerful princes as well, Assurdaninpal and Shamshi-Rahman. And they vie for power and their father's approval. And the noblemen have gained power. The Assyrian noblemen, once back... Assyria has been around for 1,000 years or more. Right. And once Assyria was ruled by powerful noble families, and the kings have been around since maybe 500 years. But these noble families are always a problem. They didn't dare do anything during the days of Ashurnasirpal II or when Shalmaneser III was powerful. But now he's growing old and tired.
That is a recipe for rebellion.
Yes, I found some new information. I'm reading a book about the Assyrian Empire. I did a lot of research last year for the YouTube show, and I'm mainly using that research. But now I find something I did not cover on the YouTube show. And let's meet the Assyrian palace wife, Mulisu Mukanishat Ninua. This name means... The goddess Mulisu is the one who submits to Nineveh. And Nineveh is one of the three Assyrian core cities of old. Mulisu is the goddess who is the wife of Assur. And I still can't get my head around this Assyrian religion because they only have one god. And then they have a lot of gods and they are all the same. But it looks a lot like Babylonian religion. I don't think it holds when you... try to question the Assyrians.
Yeah, questioning someone's religion on whether it's logical, Dan?
But it's very inconsistent.
Okay.
So Melissa may or may not be identical to the Mesopotamian goddess Ninlil, the wife of Enlil. And Enlil is kind of the Asher figure in Babylonian religion. Okay. She's also identified with Ishtar, and the Assyrians like Ishtar a whole lot. Submits to Nineveh. There's like a goddess submitting to city. That probably just means that this palace wife is from Nineveh.
Ah, okay.
Nineveh will later become the capital, and it will be the greatest of all the Assyrian capitals. We'll talk a lot about that later. So this woman, Mulissu Mukanishat Ninua, her tomb was found by Iraqi archaeologists in Kala. That's the capital right now, then, or in the 820s BC. Mm-hmm. Shalmaneser III's capital that his father built and had that great party in. So this tomb was found next to a wife of Tiglath-Pileser III, and that's 80 years later. The Assyrian king had many wives, but the palace wife is probably the queen, the closest thing to queen in Assyria.
Okay.
We found a tomb text written on the sarcophagus and also on a stone tablet. So there were two copies of this text. And here is the text.
This tomb belongs to Mulissu Mukanishat Ninua, palace wife to Ashurnasirpal, king of the world, and to Shalmaneser, king of the world. No one may in the future bury any harem lady or palace wife here, or remove the sarcophagus from this place. The one who removes the sarcophagus from this place, his spirit will not receive any sacrifices for the dead, together with the other spirits. This is a curse from the gods Shamash and Elishkigal. I was the daughter of Ashur Nirkadaini, head cupbearer of Ashurnasirpal, king of Assyria. The one who in future removes my throne from the table of the spirits, his spirit will receive neither water nor bread. Someone will instead in the future cover me with a blanket, rub me with oil, and sacrifice a sheep for me.
The giant palace in Kala, Ashurnasirpal's second palace, was sort of had different levels where mm-hmm. you gained access. So only the king gained access to the very inner chambers, but the palace wife had a lot of access as well, and she had her own quarters as well. And the weird thing that she mentions both Ashurnasirpal and Shalmaneser means that she was probably young enough when Ashurnasirpal II died that his son married her as well. And that was not common. It was definitely not the rule, so she was probably quite a breathtaking woman. And it is quite possible that she is the mother of the next king. But it's hard to tell. But this very important tomb then, because she died, she probably died after Shalmaneser. Or maybe she died during his reign and he was so smitten by her still that she got this amazing tomb.
Right.
But we haven't found many tombs like this. So she looks super important.
How many writings of, you know, from any queen have we seen, you know, from this time period? It seems like, you know, we see the rare things we do get are all, you know, from the men. How many in all?
Yes. In fact, there is a lot of information on Assyria we don't have access to in the current political state. So a lot of interesting Assyrian places are not fully excavated yet. And there is a lot of work for archaeologists to be done in Iraq if there is ever peace. So we could easily learn a whole lot more. There is a lot of Assyrian correspondence, like normal letters,
right,
preserved. From this time and onwards, from the middle of the 8th century BC, we get a lot more. So, in fact, we could learn a lot more about the Assyrian women later.
Okay.
And if they could just calm down in Iraq, we we could get into this.
Yeah, I'll ask for that for Christmas.
There will be an Assyrian queen who is more famous than any other Assyrian, I think.
Mm-hmm.
more famous than any of the kings, but it's all lies. But it's based on a real person. And we'll dedicate a full episode to the amazing legends of Semiramis, Queen of the World, who allegedly ruled Assyria, who allegedly founded Assyria, and founded Babylon, and founded Armenia, and went to Japan. She is a superhero.
I was going to say, this is impossible.
I try to stay away from the legendary material, but her legendary material is just too good not to talk about.
Awesome.
So it's coming up in a couple of episodes, actually. We'll talk about Queen of the Universe. But she's based on a real person then, but Mulishu Mukanishat Ninua, she is quite real. Also, the fact that she is from Nineveh probably means that she's from one of these noble families. And that means that the noble families are quite powerful still, because they get to marry the king. The later Sargonite kings, they will marry foreign princesses and make them the palace wives as a step for international diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's more important to make the noble families of Assyria happy than to make foreign powers happy, because there are no foreign powers powerful enough to challenge Assyria.
Right.
But there are foreign powers powerful enough to irritate Assyria. Such as Urartu.
Urartu.
Urartu. Is it Urartu in English?
Urartu.
Urartu or Urartu?
I would say Urartu.
Okay, it's becoming a superpower to the north of Assyria in the mountains. And I just read a geographical description here. And from this core, the heartland of Assyria, you just have pretty much this wall of mountains right to the north. And it's impassable. So in order to get to Urartu, you have to go around, either to the west or to the east. So Urartu is actually quite close to Assyria, but you can't get between the two.
Ah, that makes sense.
And that's why the Assyrians are so scared of a powerful state to the north. So in 829 BC, Dion Usher, the field marshal, he attacks the north. And he can't invade Urartu because the mountain fortresses are too strong. The Urartian army has grown powerful. Sarduri is the king of Urartu. So they fight in Kubushkia, which is one of these small states that are between the two powerful nations. So they fight for this little state, and nothing much happens. Dion Usher goes east after the fight and plunders the Manians and the Persians, probably in frustration. And then he's back next year. So in 828, he again attacks Urartu, this time in Musasir. And Musasir is a weird place because it's tightly connected to Urartu, and it's right to the south of Urartu. It's just a city and its surrounding area. But it has religious significance for the Urartians. And they are allied to Sarduri's nation. And there is a fight. It is pretty much a draw. And then Dion Usher goes back to Kubushka, where he was last year. And then finally... Wait a minute. He attacks and plunders Musasir. That's what happens.
Okay.
And the small state of Gilsan pays tribute. But Sarduri is not broken, and he looks more powerful than ever. So now, if something were to happen to the Assyrians... The Urartians would be a big threat.
Yeah, there's... because it seems like all the Urartuans have to do is let the Assyrians, bash themselves against the rocks. And
yes.
It becomes an attrition game at that point.
That's definitely the plan. But in this year, 828 BC, Sarduri I of Urartu dies. And he has only been the king for 6 years. We don't know why he died. He was doing quite well against the Assyrians. And the throne passes peacefully to his son, Ishpuini. And this is the third king of Urartu. And just for the Assyrian Empire, Ashurnasirpal II was the third king. And this guy is the charm. It's now Urartu kicks off. This is a powerful king. And he will conquer new territory because he can't get into Assyria because the Assyrians are far too powerful. But he can conquer stuff to the west, to the north, and to the east. And he does. So now Urartu is the second most powerful state in the Near East.
Wow.
Egypt is around, of course, but Egypt is not that powerful. So I think this is definitely the second most powerful state. There is considerable social, industrial, and military improvements in Urartu. And they have been building their society on Assyria. But now they reject the Assyrian language and they start to make their own inscriptions. And this is pretty much cuneiform, but it's their way. They write their language in it.
Okay.
And every time they write something in stone, they have to repeat it three times for magical purposes. But this means then that we now have Urartian sources.
Whoa, okay.
So we can sometimes get the conflict between Urartu and Assyria. This will be going on for quite some time.
So when you were talking about they write it three times, like they actually write the exact same thing three times?
Yes. So sort of like in the tomb of the palace wife, there the same thing was written two times. And there might have been a third inscription that is lost.
Okay.
So writing a thing three times means it's great. There is magic. It's awesome.
It's awesome, yes.
So, we will see Urartu be a problem. And sometimes we get their conflicts from both sides, and there are big discrepancies in what they write about what happened.
I'm sure there are.
So if one side wins a major battle, the other side just doesn't mention it. So nothing happened.
Yeah. Just skip that day. Skip that day.
All right, let's move to the other side of the world. I remember the Zhou dynasty in China?
Yep, King Li.
Yeah, they have been hanging in there for 200 years already. And they had this Gonghe Regency. They put the king in exile.
Right.
And then they put his son in training. And then they had a regency that ruled Zhou China. But in exile, in 828 BC, King Li dies. And thus the regency has to put the prince on the throne as the king, because he is the true Zhou king. And they do. So this sounds like a recipe for disaster. Like, why would the regency give up their power? And
this is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
why would this guy not be a tyrant if he gained power? But it all works out. So they educated Prince Xuan to be a great king. And he seems to be doing a great job for all of the 820s.
Wow, nice.
So nice to see a plan that works. In 827 BC, Dian Ashur is back in Urartu. And the details are lost, except for the words to the Manians. So he probably took a detour to the east to beat up the Manians. Do you even remember the Manians?
I remember the name, but that's about it.
They are right to the east of Lake Urmia. It's to the east of Assyria and to the southeast of Urartu.
Okay.
While these powerful kingdoms are doing their thing, the Manians are actually growing as well. And they probably have the Persians and the Medes as their vassals at this point. They are in the Zagros Mountains in what is today Iran. And they are actually doing quite a good job themselves. So we will see more Assyrian campaigns like randomly go east, but there seems to be not much to gain there except horses. And now in 828 BC, something extraordinary happens in Assyria.
What's that?
We lose all the sources. There is nothing written for 7 years.
Really?
Yeah, and when this happens, it will happen at other times, but when the sources grow silent, you know that Assyria is in dire straits.
Because they can't write down any super accomplishment.
Yes. And nobody really knows what happened during these 7 years, but we will get the report in 820 BC when the sources pick up again. And this report is probably filled with lies. But we will cover this in two episodes. We'll talk about the black obelisk of Assyria. But the empire will be gone from our story for 7 years.
Wow.
And of course, the neighboring countries get a reprieve. And let's see how they use it.
Is it all for peace and prosperity and love?
Probably not. The Neo-Hittite and the Aramean kingdoms in Syria are the first to notice because they have been beat up by the Assyrians a lot. And now most of them are Assyrian vassals at this point. There is an Assyrian garrison at Tel Barsip, but it seems to be preoccupied by whatever is going on in Assyria. And then the demands for tribute disappear. So what to do? Suddenly the Assyrians are not putting pressure on these states. And the most powerful state in the vicinity of Syria is Aram Damascus. And the second one is Israel. So their first reaction then, Aram Damascus ruled by Hazael and Israel ruled by Jehu, they immediately start fighting with each other. Because that's what they really want to do.
Yeah.
And the Assyrians have just been a problem for their internal war. But now they can pick it up. And nothing much happens, really. And that's what we needed to talk about before we could get to the siblings. Queen Dido and King Pygmalion of Tyre.
It's all coming back around now.
Yeah, this is semi-legendary material. And we are sort of on a loose footing here. But we know some things for sure. And I will tell the story as I think it happened. But we are on a bit of loose ground here.
Okay.
So because of the Assyrian demands, Tyre has grown very powerful. Because Tyre can supply... Tyre is the number one Phoenician city on the coast of Lebanon. They are trading all over the Mediterranean. And this is because the Assyrians are forcing them to do all this trade. They wanted to, but now they had to speed it up to pay the demands, the tribute. But it's actually working out great for Tyre. There is a sharing of power then between Pygmalion and Dido, but the people, they prefer the boy king because they think it's a bit weird to have a woman ruling you. So Dido has to look for alliances, and she then marries her uncle, the former king's younger brother, Aserbas. Naserbas has been spending his time being the high priest of Melkart and amassing a lot of wealth, like a good Phoenician should. So he is super rich, probably the richest man in Phoenicia. And he has hidden his treasure because he fears that King Pygmalion will take it. The boy king then has nothing to do with the play Pygmalion or My Fair Lady. That Pygmalion was a sculptor in Cyprus, also in ancient times, but a lot later than this.
I gotcha.
This Pygmalion is the king of Tyre between 831 and 785 BC. So he will be the king for a long time. That's bad for Dido, probably. There is something called the Nora Stone that was found in Sardinia in 773 that references this king. So it seems to be a historical person. But the one thing standing in his way then to seize full power in Tyre is his uncle, Aserbas. So he decides that the best solution to this is to send soldiers and murder his uncle. So very subtle.
Right.
So the soldiers kill his uncle, or there's an assassination, or somehow Aserbas dies. But the treasure is hidden, so he doesn't find all the legendary wealth of Aserbas. And he wants to torture his sister. But now the people of Tyre stepped in and they preferred him, but they still like the queen. So Pygmalion, sensitive to the opinion of the populace, decides that what do I do now? And he is looking for a way out. And his sister offers a marriage proposal. This is not unknown in Egypt, but it's still... She offers to move into the palace. It's not sure if it's a marriage proposal.
Oh, okay.
And also the priests of Melkart are very angry because their high priest was murdered. And now Pygmalion fears divine retribution here. And then he realizes that if Dido moves into the palace with him, he can probably control her, and then he has control of Tyre. But Dido is acting here. She's doing stuff without the king knowing. She's talking to all these nobles that are scared of the new king. And she gives her servants a lot of bags, sacks with stuff in them. And they're filled with sand.
Mm-hmm.
But the servants don't know that, so they are instructed to throw the bags into the sea. And the servants are told that this is Aserbas' treasure. So the sacks of sands are thrown into the sea. And the reason they should throw his treasure into the sea is because Melkart will be placated. Melkart will be happy if he gets the treasure. And yeah.
It's a sacrifice.
And this information gets to Pygmalion then. So he's like, no, the treasure is gone. And then Dido decides to flee. So she gathers the nobles that don't like Pygmalion. And then she tells her servants, wow, you just threw the treasure of Aserbas into the sea. Can you imagine what the king will do to you? And the servants go, oh, no, but you told us to.
She's wow.
You better come with me. So she gets a lot of servants and nobles, and then they steal the fleet, a big part of the fleet of Tyre, and they go. So they get away from the king, go into the Mediterranean, and they have a priest of Baal. It says a lot of this. Dido is a prominent figure in the Aeneid. And we'll talk about the Aeneid at some later point. But this is the great... Did you hear about this in school? The tale of Aeneas?
Yes, we did.
No, because we don't hear about this in school in Sweden.
Oh, really?
But I hear they talk about it in American...
Yeah, we do. The Aeneid and the Iliad, the Odyssey, all those.
Do you remember anything about the Aeneid?
Oh, gosh, no. It's been too long.
This is the tale of the founding of Rome. And Rome had two conflicting foundation stories.
Mm-hmm.
One was the Trojan prince Aeneas, who founded Rome. and the other one was Romulus and Remus. So Augustus, during his great moral campaign, the first emperor of Rome, he decided that he hired a good writer to write the Aeneid, which would be the great epic tale of Rome. And there they would unite these two foundation myths into one, so making both foundation myths true. And in this book, Dido is a very, very big character. And we'll have to address this in an upcoming episode. We'll actually talk about it very soon. But we have this big party of Phoenicians going into the Mediterranean. They pass by Cyprus, and there they pick up 80 beach prostitutes.
Oh,
80
what?
Sacred beast prostitutes.
Okay. Just prostitutes that live on the beach?
And are sacred.
And are sacred, okay.
I have not discovered what this means, but I'm sure it's important. I think we live in a poor world where there are no sacred beach prostitutes. But they joined this band of refugees, and it's probably because they need women to find a new home and be a new people.
If you want your city to survive, you better be making babies.
I can't help but picture just 80 hot girls sitting on the beach doing religious stuff and being prostitutes. It's like, it's super weird.
Yeah, that's crazy. But hey, that was also 2,800 years ago.
Yes, when being a sacred beach prostitute meant something.
So, where have our fundamental values gone, Dan? Where are the 80 beach prostitutes?
But Cyprus is way too close to Tyre, so Tyre's influence is over Cyprus, so they can't stay there. They have to go west, and they have to find a new home. And they will, in 3 or 4 episodes, we'll talk about where they go. And that's it for today.
I think you mentioned where they go a long time ago. I'm talking like 10 episodes ago.
I think I did.
Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah, I can't keep a secret.
Yeah, I know. No.
You have heard of the place they go to.
Yeah.
And this is the reason then for a lot of things that happen in the history of Rome. That's why the Romans are so obsessed with this tale.
Everybody's looking for legitimacy.
We still will not talk much about Rome before 616 BC, when Rome will enter our story as an Etruscan city. So no Romulus and Remus on this podcast, because they are a fairy tale.
Yep, they don't exist. All right.
Babies do not suckle wolves.
No.
If they want to live.
Yeah, they would not last long. But
there is another people we'll talk about next time.
Oh, yeah? What's coming up?
It's the Greeks.
Greeks.
The Greeks are getting out of the Dark Age.
Finally.
And they will kind of take over this podcast. And they will start next episode by founding their very first colony.
Well.
And it's you can have a guess where it is, but it's probably not where you expect it to be.
I expect it to be in Spain.
Oh, the first Phoenician colony was in Spain, so...
Exactly. I'm saying they're just following an established route.
They are, but it's not in Spain.
Okay. All right, well, folks, tune in next time. And you will find out. Please go to the YouTube/Fan of History. Like and subscribe and share. Tell people about it. Also give us a review on iTunes. We love to see any kind of review. Patreon.com/Fan of History. And also, when you subscribe, if you give us a review on iTunes, I'm sure Dan and or I can respond in some way to at least be amusing.
And we will read your review here.
We will.
Even if you hate us.
Even if you go down to the detail saying, Dan, you know what you're talking about. That Brennan guy, what is he even doing there? That's fine. You tell us what you think. We just appreciate you listening.
Also, if you become a patron at patreon.com/fanofhistory, we will shout you out here and in the YouTube show. But there is an option on Patreon. If you set it to no rewards, we will not shout you out. So we have new patrons, but they all set this option. So I'm starting to wonder if this is the default setting. So if you want a shout out, make sure you are telling us that you want your patron rewards.
We will gladly do it.
Absolutely. We'll actually, if you enter the Patreon high enough, we'll do special episodes for you. You get to choose the subject. Any historical subject.
And I will do the voices.
Yes.
So there you go. All right. Well, for this week, I am Brennan.
And I'm Dan.
And this has been The Fan of History.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.